It is Tuesday, July 21st. The markets are moving fast, and the headlines are finally catching up to the mess we've been tracking all week. NVIDIA has taken a 9.3% stake in Nebius, pronounced NEHBS, a Dutch AI infrastructure firm. The two companies plan to deploy 5 gigawatts of systems by 2030. This isn't just a chip supply deal. It's a move to lock in cloud deployment infrastructure for the long haul. Meanwhile, TSMC, the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, is reportedly eyeing a 10% price hike on chips by 2027. Hardware costs are rising, but the tech giants aren't blinking. They are betting that vertical integration is the only way to survive the current compute arms race. If you're Samsung, you're trying to build a moat around your users with a proprietary credit card and wallet ecosystem to keep them from jumping to Apple. If you're a legacy business like Cracker Barrel, you're doing the exact opposite. They are selling off 26 locations and their biscuit brand just to pay down debt. It is a tale of two corporate realities. One side is burning cash to build the future of intelligence, while the other is frantically trying to clean up its balance sheet to survive the present. The physical world is becoming the main stage for AI, too. Companies like Applied Intuition are moving intelligence into mining equipment and logistics networks. The goal is no longer just digital optimization. It's about teaching machines to reason and act in high-stakes, unpredictable environments where hardware failure is not an option. We've spent the last year obsessed with chatbots, but that's the easy part. Building an AI that can safely navigate a physical warehouse or a defense platform is a different beast entirely. It's a massive engineering hurdle, and honestly, it's where the real GDP growth is going to happen. The geopolitical landscape is hardening into a full-scale AI decoupling. China has narrowed the gap with U.S. frontier models to just 1 or 2 months by using sophisticated distillation techniques. They are pushing open-weight models to the world, which makes it harder for U.S. providers to maintain pricing power. We are seeing a shift where AI is no longer a neutral tool but a strategic weapon. If you are a business leader relying on these models, you're walking a tightrope. One wrong move in your supply chain or your model routing, and you could be cut off by government-mandated restrictions. It's reached a point where tools like NanoLock, a zero-trust architecture for AI agents, are becoming mandatory. Instead of hoping an AI behaves, you sandbox it. You force every action through an isolated proxy gate. You treat the software as if it's potentially malicious by default, which honestly is the only sane way to handle this stuff. We are moving toward a world of autonomous, self-evolving agents, and the current move fast and break things approach to security is a recipe for disaster. The market is trying to price all of this in, and it's a mess. Trump media is selling a millisecond-fast feed of presidential posts, which is a hell of a thing to watch in real time. It effectively turns insider access into a product, undermining the idea that capital markets should be fair for everyone. Investors are moving 25% of their portfolios into private credit and hedge funds just to find some stability. They are sensing that the Magnificent Seven tech stocks are at a turning point where heavy infrastructure spending is going to crush free cash flow. There's a growing resentment toward this whole cycle. You see it in the backlash against data centers. It's not just NIMBYism. It's a visceral reaction to the feeling that the tech elite are prioritizing their infrastructure over the communities they sit on. When the private sector stops providing a sense of stability, people look to the military or other state institutions for a sense of purpose. The bottom line is that the U.S. is facing a structural choice. We can either build a transparent, functional system that survives the global AI commodity trap, or we can keep chasing short-term gains while our institutional integrity quietly rots away. Right now, it's looking like a race to the bottom. That race for infrastructure is just one piece of the puzzle. Things get a lot messier when you look at how the government is handling trade. The White House is moving to impose 50% tariffs on Canadian goods using Section 301 of the 1974 Trade Act. This strategy targets specific imports like alcohol and hockey equipment, effectively signaling a shift toward country-by-country negotiations that could shatter the unified USMCA United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, trade bloc. It is a hell of a way to handle a neighbor, and it essentially turns trade policy into a volatile, bilateral grudge match. We see this same pattern of institutional opacity in domestic policy. In Arizona, there have been reports of significant fluctuations in SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, enrollment. While some claims suggest a 50% drop, these figures are currently being scrutinized for reporting errors and administrative shifts. It is a reminder that states are often terrified of federal penalties for administrative mistakes, leading to increased paperwork that can inadvertently block eligible applicants. They are essentially managing the safety net to keep their own spreadsheets clean. It is the same logic that leads to systemic reputational damage in the food sector. The FDA, Food and Drug Administration, linked an iceberg lettuce supply from central Mexico to a cyclospora outbreak. Even after they retracted the specific link to Taylor Farms, the damage was already done. Consumers stopped eating at restaurants entirely because they cannot distinguish between one supply chain and another. When institutions fail to communicate clearly, the public punishes the entire ecosystem, not just the guilty party. Even our metrics for success are starting to look like convenient fictions. The standard national homeownership rate is reported at 65% by the Census Bureau, though some analysts argue this figure overstates actual ownership by failing to account for specific occupancy nuances. We are building policy on top of complex data, and it is the younger generation that is paying the price for the error. It is not just the government. The AI, artificial intelligence sector, is hitting its own wall. High margin, closed source labs are seeing their competitive moats evaporate as open source models like China's Kimi K1.5, pronounced Kimi K1.5, provide comparable performance at a fraction of the cost. The secret sauce is out, and the market is splitting between high-end scientific research and the rest of the economy, which is rapidly moving toward cheaper, task-specific intelligence. When you look at all of this together, the trade wars, the hollowed-out safety nets, and the broken housing metrics, a pattern emerges. Our institutions are prioritizing short-term risk mitigation over long-term stability. They are trying to hide the errors and the rising costs behind layers of bureaucracy and opaque data. But the systems are becoming too fragile to hold the weight of these secrets. When the reality finally breaks through, it is rarely a soft landing. It is just another sign that the old ways of managing systemic failure don't work in an environment where everyone can see the cracks. Blowing up long-standing trade agreements is one way to handle things, but it's not the only way to manage a company. Some leaders are trying a different, more brutal approach. Kaznejatin, pronounced Nehyatin, took the helm at the real estate firm Open Door and immediately scrapped the standard playbook for organizational change. He ended remote work, cut redundant business lines, and pushed out middle management layers that existed primarily to gatekeep information. The goal wasn't to manage a transition. It was to force a structural reset that prioritized objective performance over comfortable consensus. Here's the thing. Most companies treat alignment as a goal to be achieved through meetings and memorizing. But the reality, as noted in recent leadership analysis, is that organizational misalignment is the permanent human state. When leadership relies on consensus, they're usually just collecting a series of polite lies. People keep their doubts to themselves to avoid looking difficult, and the organization drifts toward failure without anyone ever saying the quiet part out loud. It turns out being a panoramic leader is the antidote to this drift. Instead of relying on an internal GPS that is likely 10 years out of date, leaders are now expected to act as investigators. They need to stress test their vision against the reality of suppliers, unions, and even hostile activist investors. Indra Nooyi, pronounced Nooyi, famously did this at PepsiCo. She didn't view her critics as enemies. She viewed them as high-fidelity data points. There is a massive tension here, though. You have one school of thought demanding that leaders be data-driven to the point of paralysis. Then you have the operators who argue that data is purely backward-looking. These folks say that if you wait for a spreadsheet to prove your next move, you've already lost. They suggest that intuition is just highly compressed, subconscious data from years of experience. You ignore that experience at your own peril. The common thread across these strategies is a brutal rejection of corporate polish. We've all seen the awkward promotional videos and the jargon-heavy pitches that collapse under the slightest scrutiny. That's the VASA effect. When you lead with complex, defensive language, you aren't signaling intelligence. You're signaling insecurity. The most effective founders are now moving toward what's called crescendo communication. They use silence and specific, granular data to force the listener to pay attention. They don't ask for feedback. They make specific recommendations. It's about replacing the artist who has a vision with a hybrid model of artists and soldiers. You need the visionary to see the path, but you need the operational counterpart to actually build the road. When companies ignore this, they get results like the 7-Eleven egg salad sandwich experiment in Japan versus North America. You can't just copy-paste a successful model into a different culture and expect it to work. You have to understand the local terrain. The biggest shift is the move from change management to radical truth. This is uncomfortable, obviously. It requires decoupling the truth from the person who says it and attaching it directly to the problem. If a project fails, you don't blame the process or the alignment. You look at the specific mechanics of why it broke. Most of this comes down to one simple, shitty reality. Professional excellence is just the capacity to endure the pain of reality. We spend half our lives in meetings trying to avoid that pain by using social lubricants like synergy or stakeholder engagement. If you want to actually build something, you have to be willing to kill the bureaucracy that protects those comfortable lies. The companies that survive aren't the ones with the best consensus-building tools. They're the ones that treat communication as a high-stakes operational skill. They know that if you don't define the narrative, your employees will build their own. And spoiler alert, it's rarely the one you want. You have to be specific, you have to be vulnerable, and you have to be willing to be the person who points out that the emperor isn't wearing any clothes. It's not soft skills, it's just survival. Cutting the dead weight is one thing, but keeping your head in the game is another. If you need a break from the corporate grind, let's look at where the data is actually going. The Fantasy Premier League, pronounced FPL, has overhauled its interface for the 26-27 season. The platform now includes an official price change predictor and live, 20-minute delayed bonus point updates. The game has also pushed its lockout time to 9 a.m. the day after the final match of the week. They have also tweaked the bonus point system to rebalance player roles. The league raised the threshold for defensive points from 2 to 3 actions per point, and remove the penalty for being tackled. Goalkeepers now earn 2 points for every save and bonuses for stopping big chances. Finally, the game is shifting from total rank numbers to rank percentages to better track long-term performance. Here is the thing about these changes. They essentially kill the information gap that used to separate the hardcore players from everyone else. For years, you needed third-party websites and hidden data to know if a player's price was about to spike or crater. Now, the game gives you that information directly. It is a win for transparency, but it is a nightmare for anyone who enjoyed having an edge. When everyone has the same data, everyone tends to make the same moves at the exact same time. That leads to herd behavior. Prices will likely fluctuate much faster than they did in the past. If you are not glued to your screen, you are going to get left behind by the volatility. It is not about who has the best intel anymore. It is about who can keep their cool when the market starts swinging wildly. The changes to the bonus point system are an attempt to fix a specific problem. Last year was a center back's paradise. Everyone was stacking their squads with defenders who just sat there collecting points for clearances and blocks. By raising the bar for those defensive actions, the league is trying to make wingers and playmakers relevant again. But honestly, I am skeptical. Early analysis suggests these tweaks are pretty incremental. If the underlying scoring still favors defensive grit over creative flair, we are just going to see the same meta strategy under a different coat of paint. It is a classic case of an institution trying to engineer a specific outcome without actually changing the fundamental incentives of the game. The most interesting shift is the real-time feedback loop. Seeing your rank move in real time while a match is still happening is genuinely stressful. It turns the game into a high-frequency trading floor. It forces you to watch the scoreboard instead of the actual football. That is a hell of a thing to do to a fan base that already spends way too much time worrying about clean sheets. The takeaway is simple. The game is becoming faster and more reactive. Success this season will not come from having the best historical model or the most clever transfer strategy. It will come from ignoring the noise. If you spend your time chasing every live point update or panicking when the price predictor shifts, you are going to burn out. The winners this year will be the ones who can look at a volatile, shifting scoreboard and still stick to their own long-term plans. Everyone else is just going to be chasing the herd. Predicting the board is a full-time job these days. Here are a few other things you need to keep on your radar. Developers are ditching the fragmented desktop for something called Terminal Graph. It's an infinite canvas that lets you pipe data between browsers and editors, which is a hell of a lot more efficient than wrestling with Windows. If you're wondering why rapid weight loss from drugs like Ozempic leaves people looking a bit haggard, it's simple geometry. You're losing the subcutaneous fat that holds your skin up, and no amount of crunches is going to put that volume back. Marketing is getting a facelift. AI-native recruiting is replacing manual screening with personalized outreach, and apparently, it's actually working to reduce the time it takes to hire someone. Major League Soccer is shifting to a fall-to-spring schedule by 2027. It's a move to align with global transfer windows, so they can actually buy and sell players when the market is moving. The NHL is deciding to bring its media production in-house. They are dropping tens of millions to build their own infrastructure, mostly because regional sports networks are currently cratering. If you're looking at retirement, stop focusing on hoarding cash. Do a Roth conversion during a low-income year to lock in lower tax rates before your mandatory distributions hit later on. Conversion rate optimization is just a fancy way of saying you should care more about what happens after a user clicks. It's the difference between burning ad spend and actually making a profit. The folks at CourtWatch have a smart model. They aren't chasing millions of clicks. They've got 10,000 subscribers who actually care, and that's enough to keep the lights on. On the career front, sometimes you just need a peer to tell you that you aren't crazy. It's the best way to stop the spiral of resignation and finally quit a job that's draining your soul. Coastal cities are realizing that waiting for the next flood isn't a strategy. The ones that survive will be the ones that actually plan for a permanent move, rather than just building higher walls. Professionalism isn't about being a corporate drone. It's a risk management system, because while it doesn't guarantee you'll win, being unreliable pretty much guarantees you'll fail. Biological agency is the difference between a living thing and a hurricane. One has a goal and makes decisions. The other is just physics doing what physics does. If you're still fighting people in negotiations, you're doing it wrong. It's just influence. If you treat it like a collaborative effort, you'll actually get what you want without the stress. Stop playing not to lose with your money. Financial anxiety usually comes from trying to cut every expense instead of having a proactive plan to actually win. Consultants are shifting from selling services to selling outcomes, which is a much harder promise to keep. That is the update for now. We will be back tomorrow with the rest of it.